And you have been listening to the George Floyd service here on AM 950. Nice to be with you today on a day where we obviously are remembering his life. Feeling the sadness of the loss of him, as well as also getting some closure in regards to finally we had the arrest of the four officers, and now we have the ability to have a service and remember George Floyd as the world is remembering George Floyd right now. I brought up the arrest of the other three officers. Of course, Derek Chauvin had already been arrested, but new charges were announced here. Jack Rice is our expert, not only in international affairs, but also as well as our intelligence agencies and our legal expert. And he's kind enough to join us right now to start off the show to talk a little bit about the charges that have been filed, the revised charges by the Attorney General Keith Ellison, and of course the charges against the other three officers. Jack, thank you much. I appreciate the time today.
Absolutely. Glad to be with you.
There was a lot of people that when Mike Freeman announced third-degree murder on Chauvin, and as a matter of fact, City Pages had a pretty good article about this, they said that not only was this an amazingly wrong charge to put on Chauvin because it would be easy for him to beat under the nature of third-degree murder, but as well, it pretty much made it impossible to charge the other three officers. Talk a little bit about that, because, I mean, that seemed like one of the first things that Keith Ellison, I mean, and I think actually that those charges were the reason why Keith Ellison stepped in and took this case away from Mike Freeman. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, when we looked at what happened here and we looked at the charges that came, I mean, first of all, one of the issues that I think all of us looked at, a lot of us who work in courtrooms, and again, as a former prosecutor, as a defense attorney, I've been doing this for decades, is that, first of all, we watched our city burn, and we watched people in the streets by the thousands and thousands. And we had four officers fired on Tuesday morning, and not much more information was needed based upon the charging that had happened. And yet we know that Mike Freeman, the Hennepin County attorney, waited until Friday afternoon. I think they filed it at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And so, first of all, that in itself, the timing question was there. But the fact that it was charged out as a third-degree murder and then a manslaughter charge was really strange, too. And a lot of people have been asking me this question, so why didn't they go first-degree? And we'll get to that. But the real reason is you don't go for a first-degree murder charge generally unless you have a lot more, because what you really need is premeditation. You need someone who's going to say, look, this is where I'm going, this is my plan, this is how I walk down the street, I'm going to get to this place, and I'm going to go, and I'm going to kill that person. It's a very high standard, because you kind of have to crawl into the head of the person who does it. Then there, after that, is something called a second-degree intentional murder, where you don't need that issue, the premeditation piece. But the real logic behind what Attorney General, former Congressman Keith Ellison really did here, and I think this was very, very smart, was he charged this out as a second-degree unintentional murder. Now, what that's often called, sort of in my world, is it's called felony murder. And the reason it's called felony murder is because essentially what you have to prove is you have to prove that somebody was committing a felony, and that as a result of the felony that was being committed and while that was taking place, somebody dies. So in this case, what they really have to establish is they have to establish the felony piece, because obviously Mr. Floyd's death was plain and clear for all to see, including the video, despite the Minneapolis Police Department denying it at the beginning, and ultimately it having to come forward because, thank goodness, there were witnesses on the street with cell phones that had cameras on them.
Muhammad Abdi was, when the officer was that killed Justine Damon, was that second degree?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. The question, I'm going to ask a question, and I know this is, I'm asking you to look into something here that you probably can't answer definitively, but I am like a lot of people in Minnesota. It's like, I have watched Mike Freeman really mismanage charges against the cops, and it just seemed, I mean, we had the guy in the semi-truck who they're saying accidentally went down the highway and almost killed people in a protest. And within 2 days, we had, oh, there's no charges here. There was a full investigation. You know, there was more vagueness in that than you had with Chauvin's knee on the back of George Floyd's neck. And so yet at the same time, you here you have Mike Freeman. Talk a little bit about Mike Freeman. I mean, do you feel the criticism and the lack of trust by Hennepin County, especially the African-American population in Hennepin County, do you think that's warranted?
Yes, I do think it's warranted. I mean, when we look at what happened here to George Floyd, and as his family is having this first remembrance, I know there's multiples that are going to come,
yes.
Is that this is not in isolation. This is not, it's not just about Mr. Floyd. It is, but it's more than that. There is a long history here, and there is a long and deep and sad relationship between the Minneapolis Police Department and behavior of many police officers and the African-American community, how they've been treated, how they've been dismissed, how brutal this has come. I mean, when you look at some of the numbers that are out there, the number of times when you see people using chokeholds, using the ability to put pressure on someone's neck, despite the fact that the department itself says that this has essentially been banned since 1993, and yet in essentially that period of time, we have more than 200 incidences when it's actually happened. When you look at the amount of abuse that is heaped on the African-American community, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 times more likely that violence and abuse will be used on an African-American than it will be on a white person. And so when we look at what happened to Mr. Floyd, what you get from a very large swath of Minnesotans, and in particular in the African-American communities, this is exactly what we have to deal with. This is who we have to be, and this is what happens to us every day. Every day. Mm-hmm. And so what it feels like is it feels like you have a gang who can unilaterally do whatever they want. They all dress the same, so you can tell what they look like. And when they come at us, it's not just the ones and twos. It's far more than that. And it's not just the one bad apple, because it's happened again and again and again. So you can't simply just dismiss it and say, ooh, it's that one guy. This is a systemic problem. So the anger, the visceral anger that many felt, absolutely justified, and to focus it in on Mike Freeman is absolutely a reasonable thing to do, because guess what? What happens is when these officers do this, and they've continued to do this kind of thing, to simply look the other way and say, oh, no, one bad apple. Sorry. I'm sorry. The numbers speak for themselves.
Mm. There is an interesting segment they had on CNN a few days ago, and we talked about Chief Arundano and the speed at which he fired the officers. And what it has to do with is the hiring rules of the police department and the fact that after Jamar Clark's death, that there are very specific rules that, one, an officer cannot put a suspect's life in jeopardy. You cannot, very specifically, and this is part of the rules for the officers. The other thing is that officers cannot stand by and watch another officer jeopardize a suspect and not intervene. And you even have now the one officer saying he has no pulse, maybe we should roll him over, and Chauvin saying, nope, keep him down. And to make sure he was really dead. I mean, that moment really becomes very pivotal at that point. But, talk about the comparisons. I mean, obviously the hiring standards and Arundando, I know that, that Bob Kroll is going to challenge this. He feels like they didn't get due process. But, I mean, the chief thinks that they basically broke the laws of the rules of being a police officer in Minneapolis pretty straightforward. But talk about that and that impact it will have on the trial, per se.
Well, it's going to have a massive impact. I mean, when we think about this issue, and I mean, everybody, I know that that your listeners are avid social media readers. Look at the split you're already starting to see, even in social media. Because frequently what you're seeing is you're seeing one basic premise, and it happens regularly. And I can tell you, it's happened to me many times as a prosecutor, but as a criminal defense attorney for many years, standing in front of juries, there is one basic idea that many will hold on to. They desperately, regardless of the facts, they desperately want to believe that the cops are the good guys because it fits a worldview. And if they're not the good guys, then what does that mean? Because if you're supporting somebody who aren't the good guys, doesn't that make you a bad guy too? So that's a piece of it. And so when you think about what's going on now and you think about what it is the police are doing, there is the one hand that's saying they're responsive to the community. And so therefore, the idea that you're going to fire bad apples. But the problem that comes with it is what I was talking about earlier is you see this where they will say, see, problem solved. Mm-hmm. It starts right there. But guess what? If you think back to just what happened in this case last Monday night, not Monday night before last, what we had was an instance where the argument by the police was that they went to the scene of a crime and they said that Mr. Floyd pushed back, fought back, if you will. They took him to the ground. They realized he was having a medical situation, so they called an ambulance. That was basically the report. So you start with that, and this comes from the police department itself. So if that's your working premise until you have multiple people saying, no, that's not just slightly incorrect. It's a flat-out lie. Mm-hmm. That's part of your problem. You see, so when I keep coming back to this systemic, and by the way, it's a word that people in the African American community in particular have heard over and over again every time somebody dies in the street. Ooh, we're going to have systemic change. But what we get is window dressing. And it's not just an African American problem. This is a Minnesotan problem, an American problem, is that we have to have actual change, fundamental change in terms of what we're doing and how we're doing it.
Jack Rice joining us, jackrice.net, jackrice.net. If convicted on all charges, when the trial does come down the line? Oh, by the way, actually, before I get to that, the medical examiner, as you talked about lack of faith in the system, am I crazy as a legal expert here? It's almost like the Hennepin County Medical Examiner is trying his hardest to make sure that the ability for a court, a jury, a trial, whatever, to be able to look at this cleanly is not possible. There are some real questions when you look at the medical examiner's report because a lot of we're not talking fringe people. A lot of medical experts are saying what his entire autopsy, his report is just garbage.
Well, if we look at the medical examiner's report, and even if we start a little bit after that report was finished, because if you look at the original complaint here, and this was Mike Freeman's complaint, this isn't the one that was the amended complaint from Attorney General Ellison. And what it basically did was it provided a whole series of defenses to these officers.
Yeah.
And I can tell you this, and I mean it. I mean, more than 20 years, that I've had my hands on, I don't know, 10,000 complaints, maybe 10, 15,000 complaints. And what I can tell you is that I don't think I have ever, not once, seen a complaint that actually has defenses laid out for me. And that's essentially what we had here. I mean, honestly, and I actually reached out to friends of mine who do this too. And I said, have you ever seen this? I mean, even one time. I mean, understand, what a complaint is designed to do is this. What it does is it basically is a paragraph form that lays out a narrative to establish elements of a charge. And so it's myopic in a sense. It's very narrow. It's designed to say, as a prosecutor, I'm right. They're charging him because he did this, 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 and this. And so you're literally checking boxes in a sense. But when you start adding things like, oh, by the way, this one thing which would be awesome for the defense, I should add that in. And oh, there's another one, and then another one. And so that made it really strange. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, when we find that the Floyd family went out and got another truly independent medical exam, which was completely different, here's the problem. They now both exist. Both of those are likely that they're going to come in.
Well, can you get the? I mean, obviously, if they feel as if, and by the way, I should remember, as soon as the other report came out, the Hennepin County Examiner. Oh yeah, I meant to say homicide, and yeah, that was funny. Yeah, I sure you did. Is there a way for Attorney General Ellison to have that report dismissed and not included in any trial? Or is that, since
no
that's
way.
Out there?
No, yeah, way. Okay. No way. There's no way it's going to happen, because you know what? That was the report that started from the government. That's the government's report. If I'm the defense attorney, dare I say this, if I'm the defense attorney, I force them to eat that. That is now the government's argument. Mm-hmm. They can try to argue for the second one because they like it more, but guess what? That's not how it works. And so what we had in this first complaint is a disaster in a way for the prosecution of this case, because now they're stuck with it.
Well, isn't that – but this is – and we get to the point. It almost seems like that was by design, that Freeman, you know, screws up the charges. The medical examiner writes a very pro-police medical report, which is just plain garbage, and now you basically have the ability – and I fear what will happen if this happens, but you have a system that is set up in place to try to get these cops off, even when you have a murder on tape.
Guess what? That's what the entire community has been chanting in the streets about.
Yeah, exactly.
And you think they don't have the right to do that? Hmm. Now, I understand you can thread the needle and make the argument about what this report was really trying to say. But the problem is if you're ruling this in front of a jury, you get to use those words. You get to use the words where you're not really threading a needle. You can just kind of lay it out in a very sloppy fashion, which is exactly what the report was. That actually says something that the prosecutors absolutely do not want to say. And so you have the problem of not just the fact that the third degree was charged, which was weird for a whole bunch of reasons, it was weird. But you also have this medical report, the ME's report, and you're now stuck with that too. So if Mike Freeman had done nothing, I mean nothing, if nothing was done in this case, I honestly would be more confident in the strength of the prosecution than what it is that I saw after 4 days.
What's the likelihood they'll get one of the other officers to flip on the other ones?
They will.
Okay.
They will. I mean, understand that they charged these three other officers with aiding and abetting. And when I look at this issue and I think about what this means, one of the major points that I want, if I'm prosecuting this case, is I'd love to have those three officers on the stand.
Oh, yeah.
As prosecutors.
Absolutely,
I want them
yeah.
on the stand. And I want them on the stand to say, when I saw this, I saw him do X. I saw him do Y. I was right. How close were you? Our shoulders were touching. Mm-hmm. You know, I could smell his breath. I want him that close, because that's something that a jury is going to lean in on. That's what the whole world's going to lean in on. So part of the charging process is sometimes the ability to use it as pressure, mm-hmm. as friction, the ability to push that into more serious charges. And obviously their misbehavior, if they're able to prove it, and I always say that because it is important, that in the end, it's about making sure people are held accountable and people don't wiggle out from the things that they really, truly, and honestly did.
And as you pointed out, I mean, all that medical examiner's report's going to be kind of a mess in the trial. All of a sudden, if you get the other officers testifying, this idea of you have to trust the cop because, well, that's what you say. I got three other officers here who want to testify against you. And that negates that entire that path. I like that. I hope that's what happens.
Well, I mean, and you got to remember, I mean, think about how this is going to play, because what you're going to get on the defense side is you're going to get the argument that, hey, this is a war zone, man. This is a war zone. You got to understand what it is to walk into a neighborhood where you feel the way you feel. And when you're attacked the way you're attacked, and the brutality is what the brutality is. And you know, oddly, what they're going to use to help argue that? You think they're not going to try to use basically every building that's been torched?
Mm-hmm.
Every sign that's been torn down? Every street that's been demolished? They're going to use all these very same issues. So there's mm-hmm. that issue. There's a question of venue. That's going to be a massive issue in this case in terms of where you try it.
Mm-hmm.
That issue matters too.
I think, and then on the other side of it too, before anyone gets too upset, you're going to have the long history of Minneapolis police with African Americans. That's also going to have to be dealt with in that courtroom. And that's not going to be as easy to dismiss, I think, anymore as people want to make it. Especially with the last time we had this, we had actually a conviction.
We did.
Mm-hmm.
We did. And you know, that's an interesting one. Because I'm trying to remember any other. How many times have you seen the police actually essentially deliver somebody up on a platter?
Yeah. Well, because he was –
I'll be honest.
Because he was an African-American cop. And that's – I mean,
and there you go. Somali descent. Am I saying that is the answer? I mean, you never know. But there was the piece of me that was really scratching my head a lot because I just didn't see that very many other times. If you had somebody with an Irish last name – or somebody with a European last name, or you know, a guy named Mike,
guy named Chavit. Yeah, it's exactly. Yeah. You know, you're exactly right. Now, it's wild speculation on our behalf, but yeah, okay. I think we all see what's going on here, Jack. This is. I wish we could talk for an hour. JackRice.net. JackRice.net. Jack, of course, will spotlight this interview. We'll put it up on the SoundCloud page a little bit later on. Thank you very much. I appreciate the time.
Always, my friend.
Take care. We're really late now. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.